The Spinoff Podcast Network.
At Zed, we're all about moving with the times. And now it's time to be part of the climate change solution and move on from fossil fuels. As a company providing fuel to people all over the country, we also know we have a real opportunity to lead that change. We're committed to keeping Aotearoa moving by providing the right energy for everyone. We believe that innovation in fuel and how it's used can make a huge difference to our planet. Find out more at zed.co.nz.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Oh, you're on the off spin, and what a night of Test cricket we had last night. What an incredible display of broadcasting excellence, of sitting around, of groundsman work. You know, it was really something to behold.
I didn't even bother.
Really?
Yeah.
I got about an hour in before I was like, fuck this shit.
I was watching New Zealand play India replay of a warm-up game from the 2019 World Cup, and I couldn't get into it. Show the semi-final.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, there is Test cricket on at the moment for tonight only. The England women are taking on India women. Pretty delicately poised game at the moment, actually. India's following on. They're one wicket down in their second innings, I think, and still need about 80-odd to make England bat again. So, you know, let's hope that they get some good weather, because it sure as hell doesn't look like we will be.
I know. I wonder if southamptonweather.com crashed at any point.
Yeah, probably.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
It reminded me of being a kid and listening to News Talk ZB.
On the Saturday morning, yeah. Yeah,
getting the round the ground updates for who's going to get play or not.
Did you hope, when you looked outside and it was a bit shitty, did you hope for a cancellation, or did you hope to just go there and maybe not play, but play anyway?
Depends. Some days I desperately hope for a cancellation. I couldn't be fucked playing cricket. Mm. But some days you're pretty, you know, you're feeling good, you're feeling fit, you wanted to go out there, take a few wickets, score a few runs.
Yeah.
But I hated when the ball was wet, you know?
Yeah, it really kills the game, eh? It kills the game. And possibly kills the ingenious selection that India made a day in advance as well. Because now they're going to go into it's going to be a very soggy ground. And they're going to be playing with two spinners. Maybe it doesn't matter because they're two of the best spinners in the world, but maybe they've got to make a change.
According to Twitter, they can change their team.
They can, right up to the toss, which hasn't happened yet.
It's 9:30 in the morning, but it's still a good time for a beer, because the off-spin is brought to you by The Beer Spot.
Well, you've already been to the gym today, so you're allowed this.
Done my birthday burpees.
Yeah. So thank you to The Beer Spot for that. And also, if you were listening to yesterday's episode, we teased a very special guest, and perhaps slightly foolishly and riskily said who it was.
I actually texted former New Zealand cricket captain Brendan McCullum explaining that we'd teased his appearance, and that if he didn't show up, it would make me look really dumb. So he has promised. I've texted with him this morning, and he's promised to come on for a phone call very soon.
You saying that makes me even more certain that it's all going to go wrong.
Yeah, there'll be technical difficulties.
Yeah, there's going to be something. It's got to be. Anyway, we'll call him live. And
props to Alice Webler-Dole for showing up on Saturday morning to help us out.
Absolutely.
On the ones and twos.
Absolutely. And to, because we're kind of idiots when it comes to the technical side of how to do a podcast. So
I would like to acknowledge that for the original off-spin, I did a lot of the recording on my own.
You would like to acknowledge that about yourself. Would you have preferred me to acknowledge it for you?
We managed to create a podcast that was like marginally successful without any sort of skill, knowledge, or talent. and you know it worked out.
Very good point. In the 3 or 4 minutes or so before we
six minutes before we
could, this is just like what they were doing last night. We've just got to pad just it out,
filling in time.
We've got to
Do we have any? Put together a personal highlights package of our favourite Brendan McCullum moments.
Yeah. Do you want to go first?
So I think because of what happened in the game as a whole, my favourite Brendan McCullum moment is his launching the innings of the semi-final at Eden Park, which then led to Grant Elliott hitting that penultimate ball for six without Brendan's start, because South Africa got a really big score.
They had a very competitive total,
Without Brendan's ridiculous start.
And it was quite a shortened game from memory as well, wasn't
down
it?
Down to 41 overs?
Yeah.
Duckworth Lewis was on New Zealand's side that day. But without Brendan's start and the momentum that gave the team and the way it got the crowd involved after the rain delay, there was no chance of Grant even being in that position. And he just hit two of the best bowlers in the world all over Eden Park, and it was just incredible
to watch. You don't by any chance remember his strike rate from that day or anything, do you?
You tell me your favourite Brendan McCullum moment while I Google that game.
Well, I mean, so when I think about who Brendan McCullum was as a cricketer, there's a bit of recency bias here, but it's very heavily weighted towards how he reformed the culture of the New Zealand cricket team towards the idea of being themselves, reflecting New Zealand culture a bit more, being sort of, competitive but friendly. But personally, my favourite Brendan McCullum memory, and I think he was absolutely being exactly who he was in this moment as well, but it was well before all of that reform. He was quite a young cricketer at the time, and he was playing in a one-dayer in Wellington against Australia, and Brett Lee started bowling beamers at him, probably accidentally, though there were rather a few of them. And the absolute defiance that he just stepped to him with was, it was incredible to see. It's very rare for batsmen to engage in anything that you might call sledging or anything like that. But wow, he was just absolutely, totally unafraid of him, or at least gave everyone on the ground and everyone watching in the stands the impression that he was totally unafraid of him. And, maybe you can reform the team culture to being the nice guys of world cricket when you've also shown that you've got some of that sort of steel underpinning it as well.
Brett Lee sounded like a 9-year-old at Bloodworth Park on a wet Saturday morning. He's been complaining. I'm reading an interview now. He said the ball was like a piece of soap. It was.
It's like a piece of soap.
we shouldn't do accents.
No. You can do it to Australian.
So quickly back to the first semi-final of the 2015 World Cup. Brendan McCullum hit 59 from 26 balls, 8 fours and 4 sixes for a strike rate of 226.
It's quite good.
Which leads me to my second favourite.
Quite a good cricketer, really.
Second favourite Brendan McCullum moment was him falling about 3 metres short of the world's fastest test double 100. He plundered Sri Lanka, who we just seem to perpetually be playing at that period of New Zealand's cricket. And he just took them all over Hagley Oval. It was incredible. I think he arrived to bat when Kane Williamson was on about 40.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was like just watching a race car just storm past a cyclist on the same sort of track. And Kane talked about how amazing it was to be at the other end of that innings. He sort of got bogged down. He got stuck.
Yeah.
And Brendan just accelerated away.
Yeah. What's our time? Should we hit this number now?
Shall we call the former New Zealand cricket captain, Brendan McCullum?
Let's call the former New Zealand cricket captain and current commentator, and I should say going to be the breakfast host on SENZ Radio.
Hello, mate.
Oh. Hello.
Kia ora, Brendan.
How are we doing?
We're very well, thank you. You're also joined by Alex Bray, my co-host.
Kia ora, how are you?
Kia ora.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
We should probably tell you that we are live right now. We've just decided to call you live on the show. So, I hope that's okay. You know, maybe it's preparing you for your radio career where interviews just start immediately. But here's hoping.
Well, that's right. I'll be doing the interviews, not being interviewed. Anyway.
Well, true.
No worries. I've got a horse float just driving down my road here. I hope that's not coming here. I don't need any more horses.
How many horses do you have?
Too many. About six or seven. I've got too many, though. But this one's driving very slowly. So, anyway, carry on.
Are you still based in Matamata, by the way, or are you back in a big city now?
No, I'm in Matamata, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice, lovely. Yeah.
How late did you stay up last night? What time did you give up?
No, I realised once the boys were walking across the field and they were about a foot deep in water that there was no chance, so I sort of gave it up then. I got a bit of footy to play today too, so you know I had to go and get some rest.
Fair enough. When you're playing in a situation like that, how do you fill the day? Like, what do?
You play cards. Well, some guys will play cards. Some guys will just sit around and chat. Some will do a cryptic crossword, and some will sit there and play cricket inside, which never made any sense to me that you'd want to play tennis ball cricket while you're sitting there waiting for your real opportunity. But some guys do that. So you get different pockets and mixtures within your team, which pass the time.
Is it hard to stay sort of focused and prepared without knowing sort of when you're actually going to end up playing cricket?
No, not really. You sort of just get used to it, I guess. As a cricketer all the way through, you kind of become accustomed to rain, and there's a saying which does the rounds mainly in county cricket, but does the rounds, which is you never begrudge rain. So you take your days off when you get given them, and then you just try and force the result in the game if it has been shortened a little bit.
So what about as a commentator? Have you ever had to kind of pad out a day like they had to last night?
Yeah, it's hard work too, especially if you haven't got a whole lot of content in behind you. But I think sometimes actually that's where some of the real gold can come out, because you get an opportunity to sort of long form kind of discussions, and it can go in different directions. There's no real kind of set agenda when you have those chats. So I find some of those are some of the most intriguing. I've enjoyed listening to the likes of Michael Atherton and that when they dive into some of the old stories when they get given plenty of time during rain breaks. And I found as a commentator, it's actually, it's quite a good experience. It can be quite difficult at times, but if you have got enough content, it's quite good.
Well, because I find with your kind of commentary, you sort of commentate a little bit like you played cricket. It's quite sharp and incisive. It sort of seems like there's quite kind of high impact, high energy bursts. Without necessarily being the one who is spending the whole time talking. So, I mean, is that something that you see as your role in the commentary team, or is that, you know, just an impression of a watcher that doesn't quite match reality?
Oh, well, that sounds quite complimentary, actually. I'll take that on board, because that's what you're sort of trying to achieve, because there's nothing worse than, trying to take however long you need to say something which only needs said briefly. Ian Smith said that to me. He said, try and say the most insightful thing you can with the least amount of words.
It's a real art and skill, and it's really hard.
And you've also got to remember that not every single person that's watching the game is has known the game for a long period of time. So you need to at times, I'm not going to say dumb it down, but you need to allow, you've got to also explain some of the nuances of the game and some of the positions, et cetera, while you're going through your conversations and trying to make your points. So you just got to, I guess, try and hit the wider audience as well, not just cricket specialists.
And I think Spark Sport did a really good job of sort of renovating the role of the commentary team and preventing a really diverse spectrum of on people in that squad. Was it a good summer? Did you enjoy that transition to being a broadcaster?
Yeah, absolutely. I loved it, to be honest. The team that we put together from a commentary point of view, the crew and behind were outstanding as well. Our leaders and our producers and directors and executive producers and big bosses at Spark were so giving of their time and their they just allowed us to develop at our own pace as a team. And I think there was some really nice moments right throughout the season where you could almost see developing relationships and friendships in the commentary box. Everyone that's in there is different in their own way. Everyone's got great pedigrees in various aspects, and it is a very diverse group of commentators as well. But I think there's a real nice collective harmony within that group, and I think that comes out with a bit of softness and also enthusiasm for the game and so a sense of positivity on the screen. Well, that's what we're trying to achieve anyway, and that's what I felt within the commentary box. And I mean, the point where even after every day, everyone would sit back and have a beer after the day's play and just talk through, you know, how we go today, anything we can do differently tomorrow, can we improve in this aspect? Mm. And that's pretty rare to have a culture kind of develop within a commentary box, because normally what happens is the minute you're not scheduled to be on air, you're in the cab back home and you don't even hear what's happening. But maybe because we're slightly younger but maybe slightly more inexperienced as a commentary group, we kind of got to grow together. And you know, we made a whole lot of mistakes too. But I think, you know, from Spark's point of view, they wanted that. They wanted us to be different and to try to sell the game a little bit differently. So hopefully we achieve that in the first year.
Well, first year of six. So, you know, plenty of time to sort of hone it as well, which must be nice.
Yeah, that's right. And keep growing it, but also keep the real core of it together. And I'm sure we'll see some, you know, everyone find their real niche within the group. And guys like Grant Elliott are just absolute gold in behind the scenes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his partnership with Jeetan Patel, actually. I thought whenever those two were on together, for some reason, it just worked beautifully.
Yeah, and also just the way that he's a great conduit for everyone else within the commentary box to just relax and enjoy themselves and not take themselves too seriously. You're obviously a professional, but, you know, just really be a part of a team. No different to when he played, you know. Grant was a fantastic player, but he actually added more to the group behind the scenes than he probably did on the field as well, and that's not to be derogatory of his performances. That's just to explain how key a ingredient someone like Grant is and behind the scenes for a culture.
You sort of talk about developing a culture and quite specifically having a beer after the day's play, as it were, and figuring out how you want to do things differently. And that's something that sounds eerily similar to what was described in a very good Cricket Monthly article that's just come out recently about how you and Mike Hessen and other people involved in the Black Caps setup reformed the culture in the wake of the demolition in South Africa.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a beer.
Well, sure, yeah.
In my case, it is. But not everyone has to go down that route, but it's more the sense of being together and having a sign-off or an investment outside of the pressure of what goes on in your sort of daily job. And it's a nice sign-off. It's a way where you can turn the page on that night, learn your lessons, and move forward to the next day rather than what can really get to you, especially on the field in cricket, and I'm sure it is the same in commentary, is it becomes repetitive and it becomes mundane and you start dragging past poor performances into future performances, and it just makes it impossible to be in the absolute present, which is where the gold is. So that's where it's a really pivotal thing for teams, and that they spend a lot of time together, and there's a lot less pressure on during those moments. And I guess I'm fortunate enough to be in some leadership positions in cricket in terms of teams, but also I guess now luckily in broadcasting as well and commentary. And I guess one of, you know, if you are going to be thrust into leadership positions, then you need to ensure that you're authentic to how you want to do things. And everyone has jumped on board with all of those. So, yeah, very fortunate and got an incredible group. And it's a pleasure to work with them all. Yeah.
What's it been like watching Kane and the team build on that culture and that sort of legacy and continue to grow? And what do you think the difference between your team and his team is?
Well, I think he's taken this team to a whole new level. You know, the job at hand was very different back then. The job was very much about earning respect and trying to drag us a little bit out of the doldrums. And it's certainly no one's fault that it had been before. It's just that that's how things had sat, and we had to be brutally honest with ourselves and then start to try and climb our way back up the ladder of respect within the New Zealand people first and foremost, and then hopefully eventually around the world. And that was kind of the job at hand for us. And then the job at hand for Kane was to now, with an element of respect earned through our from our own people, now it was about trying to earn a level of respect around the world as a formidable world-class international cricket side. And they've added that element of consistency, which under my leadership was never going to happen because of the style of play that I was asking the guys to play. I'm unapologetic about that either, though, because I felt we needed that at the time. And there was going to be some big hits and there was going to be some big misses, but we needed that to free ourselves up and to actually, you know, become aware of how good we could be. And then I'm almost most proud of when I stepped away, to be honest, boys, because, you know, I could have kept playing, I could have kept sort of hanging on, and like the ego of captaining New Zealand is always going to be there. So, you know, you could have just hung on to that for a couple of years, but I knew that the team was ready to go in a different direction. I'd done as much as I possibly could with them, and the selfless thing to do and the thing that you should do as a captain or as a leader is know when it's time for someone else to step up. And then I knew that Kane would bring that. The team was ready for Kane, and it's been a perfect ascent since Kane took over to the heights that they've got to. And it's now a definitely it's the team is in his image, which is fantastic because I think the best sporting teams are always in the image of their leaders. He's encouraged a lot of leaders around him as well, and they've been sensational in their performances.
One of the things that that comes out very clearly from Kane Williamson is unselfishness. But I suppose one of the things that I want to ask about from your experience of being a captain, you've got someone like Matt Henry, for example, who's just played the test of his life and is probably going to get dropped for the pinnacle game. We don't know the team yet, but it looks like they're going to go in with a new ball combination of Bolt and Southee. So what do you say to someone like Matt Henry in a situation like that to make him feel like he is actually still part of the team?
I think it's pretty easy, to be honest. I think most of those players will know themselves whether they're in or they're out.
Right.
Cricketers are realists as well, right? And they'll know, Matt Henry will know that he got the opportunity in that test match because Tim Southee, who's been arguably, you know, one of our greatest ever opening bowlers, was resting to get right for this. And they're building so much depth. And you just got to be honest with players as well when those conversations do come about. And I'm not sure how they do it now. Back in the time I was a captain, we always had, Mike Hess and I had an agreement that I'd always go and tell the guys in the squad who weren't playing.
Really?
Just for consistency of message.
How did you find those conversations?
Well, they're uncomfortable at times because you're letting guys down. You're starving them of an opportunity to represent your country. But the guys are great. And as long as you're honest with people, you're transparent and you're consistent in your messages, which, you know, the messages coming from Mike and me were very consistent, then guys understand. And there's going to be a moment where they suffer natural self-disappointment, and that's why you're trying to tell them as early as you can that they won't be in the team. So I'd try and do it the day before. And then it gives them time to be able to just digest things themselves. Then when we turn up the following day, their job now is not to run in and try and swing the new ball. Their job now is to try and make sure that the guys who are out on the field are given everything they possibly can to perform their role the best. And when it's their time, when the time does come that they get the opportunity out on the field, then the same would be expected of those who aren't playing. So I think once you build that, and also you just got to make sure you're spending time with those guys too, particularly in test matches. So I'd normally try and get the guys who weren't playing, who were on the bench after day one, I'd try and get them together for a beer down in the hotel bar and just try and sort of invest a bit of time in them too, because it can be quite lonely on the road as a guy who's not playing.
Well, I'd imagine there must be a risk of sort of cliques developing within teams as well, right? I mean, how do you get past that?
Well, there is, and there'll always be there because everyone's different, right? Mm. I mean, you can't demand everyone to be the same. Otherwise, you may as well rip all the personality out of your side. And well, that's not how I like to see sporting teams play. I like to see them play with a bit of passion and a bit of c'est la vie sort of attitude. So, yeah, I mean, you just got to treat people the way that you want to be treated, no matter whether they like the same things that you do or not. As long as you're not suspicious, I think, of those cliques, I think that's the key. You just know that people are going to get on with various people differently. You try and occasionally bring everyone together as a collective and then allow them to just operate in their own space.
Mm. We were talking before we called you about some of our personal favourite Brendan McCullum moments that we'd been able to witness. Do you have a favourite moment from your playing career?
I have a few favourite moments for different reasons. Obviously, the 302, that moment when the crowd wouldn't sit down after after we reached 300, and just the significance of what that meant for the past players and for the New Zealand cricket public. So that was a pretty emotional moment.
I still wish the crowd had rushed the field for you, though. Like, I think we let you down just a little bit there.
I'll forgive them. I guess the last test match was able to get that fastest 100 against Australia. That's a special moment for different reasons, because that sort of showed to me that no matter where you sort of think you're at and no matter how down on confidence you are, which I was at that point in time, and I could see the finish line from a career point of view, you can still steel yourself if you're authentic to yourself. Mm. You can still find a way to kind of rise up and sort of have your moment if you're 100% belief in how you want to do it and you stay true to that. If you masquerade and you start trying to be someone you're not, then you will fail. Well, you might succeed initially, but you won't have sustained success. But that moment sort of taught me that I could still find a way to deliver even against the odds, and that was a pretty cool moment.
Big shout out to James Pattinson for his no ball.
Well, that's right. Well, maybe if his foot wasn't over, I would have got it passed back with points. So maybe I should have got there a bit early. I don't know.
That's the rules of the game, right?
But then I think like some of them, my favourite team moments, which, you know, that for me was what it was all about. I always played not for – it's a bit morbid, but we talk, Kane and myself and a few others, Tim Stout and that, we always talk about that. Your runs and your wickets and that don't go on your gravestone. It's, you know, they say loving father, friend to many, et cetera. So, you know, I played for those around me and the experiences of those and the relationships which and friendships which developed. So the team moments for me were always of more importance. And I think that the most amazing yet emotional time and sad time was obviously the Phil Hughes situation and the performance of our team which followed that was just unbelievable, really, and what it did for us beyond that. And it was a terrible time, but I think it freed us up as cricketers, because we realized that the game just needs to be played for the game. Get ourselves so caught up in the white noise and the pressures, and then that moment where we're having to play and we didn't want to, but we're playing just to be with one another, kind of had some pretty lasting impacts on our cricket team and our relationship and our culture within that group. And it brought us really a lot closer. So that was a big moment. And probably the other big moment was the 2015 World Cup, which was just a ride of a lifetime. And
it was a lot of fun for everyone, eh?
Oh, mate, it was unbelievable. It was just 6 weeks of everything you hoped for as a kid, and the opportunity to – and I'd still pinch myself now and say, why us? Why did we get the chance to have a home World Cup and just take the country on that ride? And, look, we didn't win the World Cup, but it kind of didn't matter because we had done the job of inspiring the next generation, and it wasn't our time. Yeah. Maybe it's our time now in this World Test Championship, I'm not sure, but – That was probably one of my favourite times. So there's a few there for you anyway.
So tell us about your new gig on SENZ. What's that all about?
Yep, so that's going to be a bloody exciting gig, actually. So the Baz and Izzy breakfast show.
Baz and Izzy, far out.
could be interesting listening for everyone involved. Look, neither of us are broadcasters or trained broadcasters, shall I say, and radio folks. So,
look, well, your producer, Louis Watt, he comes with a very high pedigree. So, you know, that's something.
Well, he's a jet, and he's going to have to ensure that things stick to the schedule. The top of the hour and the bottom of the hour, we only just learned what that was the other day, so we're pretty raw, but we're going to get there. And for those who are listening, the top of the hour, and who don't understand, the top of the hour is at 12 o'clock on the hand, and then the bottom of the hour is at 6 o'clock on the hand. So therefore,
oh, my God, you're ready.
That's right. But for a layman, we wouldn't understand that. So we're a bit raw, but we come in with plenty of enthusiasm. Obviously, Izzy has got the rugby pedigree, so we can cover rugby. I've got a little bit of cricket pedigree, so we can cover cricket. We're both sports fans across many other different sports. So we should hopefully be able to have a bit of fun in there and discuss some good topics. The thing that both Izzy and Louis and myself chatted about is we want to champion our New Zealand champions, you know. We want to actually bring this really enthusiastic, positive vibe to 6 till 9 in the morning. And then hopefully, because of that, the guys, all the athletes around New Zealand will get on board with it too, and they'll want to come on our show and chat, and we can sell the sort of the dreams and help to try and build their profiles too. But
so that, it's really that's cool. Really interesting, because sports radio for a long time has had an image of being such a place of negativity. You know, it's where you call up when the All Blacks have just lost a vent or the Black Caps, and it's where, you know, people get their pitchforks out. So is that, I don't know, is that something that you disliked when you're a player, that sort of mentality around sports radio?
Look, I think it's important that there's an aspect to that there, because, you know, we're not all, I love a cliche, lads, but we're not all like drinking from the same bathwater. Like, we have to bloody, it's not even the cliche. What is it? What's the cliche?
Who's drinking the bathwater at all?
You know what I mean? You know, you know what I mean anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think it's important that there's still aspects of honesty in there as well. If a performance is poor, then it needs to be pointed out. But then don't just point it out and just continue to point it out and run the personality down. Point it out and try and give a bit of a pathway forward of what could be done differently. And if you don't know yourself as a host, bring someone else in who's the expert on it. But still keep it a constructive, positive kind of vibe with some solutions moving forward. I did find when I was playing that there were some really great supporters of the game. And occasionally there were some who just wanted to shock and maybe weren't quite as informed about the game or the topic, but wanted to be heard. And that's okay too, but that's not how we're going to do it.
I'm
pretty lucky and sort of helped put it together a little bit with Craig Hutchinson. The boss, he rang me about a year and a half ago and he said, g'day mate, I own SEN over in Australia. I want to do a radio station in New Zealand. I want you to do the breakfast show. How do we put this together? And I'm like, you're having a laugh, aren't you?
A year and a half ago. I had no idea it's been in train for so long.
Yeah, and so we sort of started picking a few parts together and plotting a few pathways forward. And first thing I said to him is, no dickheads, okay? We've got to make sure we've got a good team of people that will celebrate one another as well. So when, you know, Ian Smith shows on and we've been listening and we pick up something which is really good, then we go on the next day and we talk about how good Ian Smith is at broadcasting, and that point that he made yesterday was fantastic. And then we talk about the point that Kirsty Stanway and Stephen Donald made the night before, which we agreed with. So rather than sort of trying to just be one out and isolated as shows, actually try and really pull the whole station together so that there's some consistency and a bit of a culture to try and develop over a period of time across that station too. So, yeah, it's been a cool experience, and now we're almost there. We're almost ready to launch.
When's launch date?
Still a little bit fluid. The COVID situation over in Australia and Melbourne has made things just a little difficult to get everyone over. And look, we're trying to build a station which is going to be around for 50 years. So if we have to take another week or two, so be it.
Oh, we're looking forward to it.
Really excited to have cricket back on the radio, though. It was so nice listening while I was sort of going to sleep during the Edgbaston test. And it's a format that is made for radio commentary, which I love.
Absolutely.
Really appreciative of your time, Brendan. Thanks for making space for us on the weekend, and good luck with all the future endeavours.
Oh, and good luck with the footy as well. That sounds like it's going to be the biggest challenge you've got all year, keeping fit for the footy season.
Yeah, no, I have been playing a little bit of footy this year, but we're up against it today. I'm going to make a start for the A's here in Matamata. So it could be a little niggly, and I quite like running rugby, and it's been absolutely hammering it down all night. So I might end up.
Are you playing number 10 or
tonight. No, I'm playing fullback tonight. Okay, right. If I don't get in the contact, I'd better try and get my jersey dirty somehow.
Fair enough. Well, thank you so much for coming on with the Offspin. We really appreciate it, and like Simon said, all the best.
Thank you, lads.
Shobro. One Brendan McCullum story I wanted to tell was how for my 30th birthday I played a round of golf with Brendan. And on the 18th hole, it was a few months before my wedding. And on the day after my wedding, we'd set up to have a cricket game, my friends and family against my wife's friends and family. The winner of the cricket game would get to choose the name of our future family. And on the 18th hole, after Brendan sunk his putt, I said, I got a personal request that I'm hoping you might be able to help me with, because I knew that the team was in between Christchurch and Nelson at that time of the schedule. And I asked him if he had come out and open the batting for my friends and family against my wife. And he said, mate, I'd love to. It would be an honour, except your father-in-law's already asked me and I'm going to be playing for Millie's team. And my heart sank and I freaked out that I was going to have to open the bowling against Brendan McCullum. Unfortunately, fortunately, it was a really well-arranged gag. Brendan was unable to leave the team at that time and gratefully did not show up for Millie's squad. My squad won. And
now your kids have your name.
No, now Millie's name is Millicent Eden Park.
Another well-executed gag. Very well played. Thanks,
Alex.
Thank you. What a fucking dude.
I know, lovely man.
Yeah.
He's always been very patient and kind to me with my fandom on the moments that I've managed to spring him in public.
Yep.
Had a really big night with him in Adelaide.
Yeah.
And very grateful that he didn't tell me to just leave him the fuck alone when I'd had like 19 beers.
Yeah. Very generous. We should probably wrap that up around about here. What are the chances of play tonight? Do you know?
I reckon we're going to get 40 overs.
40 overs. Okay.
Just enough to make you have to come in tomorrow morning and
yes,
record a podcast.
Yes. So if we, I don't know exactly how we'll cut off the over limit, but if there's a lot of play tonight, then tomorrow morning I'll be doing a podcast with Simon's replacement, Jonathan Pierce. And if there's not really all that much play, then we're probably not going to bother. And we'll bank up some sleep for the bigger challenges to come.
As Alex wrote earlier this week, sleep banking isn't real. So just stay up all night.
No, it's not. No. No, but, you know, got to be at peak performance, you know. You never know when we're going to get another former Black Caps test captain on and have to talk to them, semi-coherently.
I've got Richard Hadley's number.
Oh, fantastic. Let's just call him right now.
Call him next week. Call him tomorrow. Call him tomorrow. We've gone too long anyway. Thank you very much for helping us on a Saturday, Alice.
Thank you to the beer spot.
Thank you to the spin-off members, and thank you to Brendan McCullum.
Are you making the most of your KiwiSaver investment? Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of strong long-term performance. Making a smart decision now could add tens of thousands of dollars by the time you reach retirement. Book a no-obligation chat with a Generate KiwiSaver advisor today at generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Ahe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.